welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, meditation, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome our listeners into another edition of A Mindful Emergence. This program is being broadcast live November 6, 2017. It is program number 96. And with that, I want to welcome Margaret into the studio.
Hi, good to be here again.
Yeah. So as sometimes happens, you are leaving halfway through the show because you actually are teaching yoga to some people in recovery, so
mindfulness and movement.
Yeah, it's the good news and the bad news. You're going off to help some people, but we only get you for half the show. And also want to welcome at this time our guest for this week, Jesse Goldman. And the topic this week is Slacklibrium, Slackline, and mindfulness education. And an interesting topic. So, Jesse, explain a little bit what Slacklibrium Slackline is and what are we going to be focusing on this week?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me. Really excited to be here. Slacklibrium is the name of an organization that I founded about 4 years ago. And slacklining is a fairly new balance sport that a lot of people aren't familiar with. It hasn't been around all that long. It was sort of founded in the 1980s, merged out of rock climbing culture. But since then, it's kind of evolved into a sport of its own. And basically what it is a thin piece of webbing, tension between two points, typically trees. And it's kind of similar to tightrope walking, but with a tightrope, you're on a static piece of material that doesn't move, and a slackline kind of sags and sways depending on how long it is. So I view it as a sort of movement meditation, and it's a really great way to be physically active and get in touch with your body and mind.
Wow. And that's so important. And I first became exposed to it over at the Mindfulness Festival last year. You were set up over there, and we're going to talk about that festival more. But in terms of your background, I mean, you mentioned that this is both something that can be used as a sports activity as well as a mindfulness practice. Talk about when you were young. Were you involved in any kind of sports? Were you involved in meditation? What was it like for you growing up?
I grew up in Yorktown Heights, New York. It's a little town right near the Hudson River, about an hour north of New York City. And I was kind of an awkward kid. I was pretty studious. I did well in school, but I struggled in social situations a lot. I kind of like first learned about mindfulness my junior or senior year of high school. There was a Buddhist monastery about 45 minutes or an hour away in Carmel, New York. It was called Chung Yen Monastery. And on Sundays, they would offer free Dharma talks led by a monk there. So they would do like a 45 minutes of meditation followed by a talk on some aspect of Buddhism. And I went there with my girlfriend at the time, maybe four or five sessions. And that was really my first introduction to what meditation is, how it's practiced. I'd never started a daily practice until I got to college, and I never started slacklining until college either. I had no idea what it was. It was something I discovered freshman year.
So you were in high school when you went up to the monastery. How did you find out about this place? Was it your girlfriend's idea?
I think it, you know, I had like an interest in Buddhism. I grew up in a Reformed Jewish household, so my family was not particularly religious, but I did go to Hebrew school. I had a bar mitzvah, but I was never super into the Jewish tradition. Later in my life, I began to develop more of a respect for the Jewish culture. I'm still not very religious in that sense, but I did have this interest in Buddhism. I had a few books on it, and really we were just looking for things to do. And that popped up, and I do think that she was the one that mentioned it, and we kind of went and enjoyed it. We were the youngest people there for sure.
Yeah. Props for you for doing that. And it took a little bit of an effort. You said it was 45 minutes to an hour.
It's something I do.
One way drive. Yeah. So what was how did that impact you going?
I feel like as a high school student, meditation was not something that I was going to do on my own. So being there in a group setting, once you show up, like you can leave. It's not like anyone's forcing you to be there, but you sort of made this commitment to sit there. And, you know, 45 minutes, that was a struggle. That was kind of a long time. So after going to a few of those, I had this idea in my head that meditation, mindfulness was something that I was going to do. And whenever I started doing it, it would be now, but it wasn't then. It was now in the future.
Now in the future. Yeah. That has sort of a strange Zen-like ring to it.
It does.
In a sense, yeah. I spent some time in a Zen center, and it get kind of mystical and cryptic sometimes what they're talking about. So you decided to go to school, apparently, at UNC Asheville.
Yes.
All the way from the Hudson Valley down to the Smoky Mountains. How did that happen?
You know, there's a lot of great things about New York, but I never saw myself as someone who wanted to stay in New York. I actually, at that point, had dreamed of moving to California. I'd only been to California like one time, but I had the idea of California seemed really cool to me. I was really into like reggae music and kind of like alternative culture. New York was a little too fast and edgy for me. But at the time, this was 2012, the California higher education system was not really in good shape, especially for out-of-state students. It was very expensive. They weren't guaranteeing that you could graduate in 4 years. It didn't help that I didn't get into my top choice as well there. Mm. But I applied to UNCA and got accepted, and I came down to visit and immediately fell in love.
And you studied what?
I studied political science, and I had a minor in Africana studies.
So say more about that. Like, why did that interest you?
So going into college, I knew that I wanted to contribute to making the world a better place, but I always felt overwhelmed with like, what am I going to focus on? There's so many problems in the world, like animal rights, or do I want to tackle it from economics or from poverty, or all of these different angles. So for me, I was looking for like a root problem. And at the time in high school, I was really into The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. And, that was kind of my intro into politics. I miss John.
Oh, he's great.
But I had this idea that I was going to double major in political science and mass communications. I was really interested in the intersection of politics and the media and how the media affects people's perception of reality. But when I got to school, I took some intro classes in mass comm and just didn't really enjoy the department that much. I really enjoyed political science and the faculty there. And also I discovered mindfulness, which for me was more centered on the root of the problem that I was looking for than media.
And how did that happen, discovering mindfulness?
So my freshman year, I took a required freshman seminar class, and it was called Metamorphosis of the Body, Heart, Mind, and Soul.
Wow.
And to be completely honest, my mom had signed me up for that class. I did not know exactly what I was getting into, but I knew that it was taught by a literature professor. His name was Rick Chess. And Rick Chess is not only a literature professor, but also the director of the Center for Jewish Studies at UNCA. And he was also kind of the person that spearheaded this mindfulness movement among faculty at UNCA. So he had started his own meditation practice a few years prior, and they were really in the early stages of bringing mindfulness into educational curriculum and teaching pedagogy at the higher education level. So that, you know, class that I ended up in by chance, our first day, we did a mindfulness practice. And my prior experience had been through the Buddhist tradition, but this was, you know, they used things that were inspired by the Buddhist tradition, but it was very secular, mm-hmm. Very academically minded. And I really enjoyed that. And it was just kind of a great fit. So I, throughout my time at UNCA, developed a really great relationship with Dr. Chess and took a lot of his classes, and then discovered this community of faculty that were interested in mindfulness. And that was really how I got into it at UNCA.
Hmm. And what did you notice among the other students that you were around as you started becoming more self-aware of your own thinking and your own feelings and connecting with your body more through this practice?
I remember my freshman year, just I felt like I was cooler than I was in high school. I did have like a pretty good group of friends, but I felt like I was on the outskirts. Like there were people that were, you know, hanging out, and I felt uncomfortable in unstructured social environments. Like I could talk in class and have a discussion, but when it's people just hanging out in the outside world, I'm like, oh man, I don't really know how to navigate myself through this. And sometimes I think self-awareness can be kind of disabling in some senses. If you're overly self-aware, you're thinking too much rather than just being in the moment there.
Kind of creates a story that gets momentum.
Yeah. But I feel like throughout my experience in college, I watched like the perception of what was cool. A lot of those people who seemed to be cool freshman year ended up dropping out or not being around for that long. And I kind of went on to really participate and do some cool things. So I feel like I gained a lot of self-confidence through just doing my own thing, following my own path, rather than trying to like fit in with the group.
Tell us about the time on campus when you first saw the slackline and what that was like.
So I first saw slacklining my first week of freshman year. My friend and now current business partner, Patrick Green, had just learned about it a few weeks prior to coming to UNCA. So he had bought one and set it up on the quad.
And explain what the quad is for people who don't know.
The quad is like a kind of a central area in campus. It's a grassy area with trees. The library is there and it's kind of surrounded by a lot of academic buildings. So in between classes and just generally throughout the day, it's a gathering spot. People are hanging out there in their hammocks or reading or just playing frisbee or whatever they're doing. So I discovered this slackline, and Patrick had actually was in the same dorm as I was on like the other side of the hall. So we'd kind of met each other, and it was just something to try out. And the thing with slacklining is that anybody that's trying it out for the first time, no matter how big or athletic you are, you can't do it at first. It takes some time. It's
humbling.
Yeah. So I couldn't do it at all. I didn't view myself as someone who was like particularly skilled at it. I didn't feel myself like being a natural, but it gave me something to do. And for me, the slackline was a defined space. Whereas I could go over here and like, I'm hanging out at the slackline area. I don't have to be nervous about, how long am I going to hang out and talk to these people? I could kind of just have the excuse of being near the slackline. And that was a great way to meet people and have something to do.
Mm-hmm. If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on the new WPBM LP in Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7 on your dial, and streaming globally at WPBMFM.org. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Jesse Goldman, talking about Slacklibrium Slackline in mindfulness education.
So Jesse, how do you think that mindfulness and slacklining relate to each other?
Well, for me, at the basic level, slacklining is an embodied mindfulness practice. It brings mindfulness into the physical body. The way that I view mindfulness and the way that I teach it at a basic level is this three-step practice. So step one is to choose an object of focus. And the object of focus can be anything, but typically we use the breath because it's consistently available, it's free. So choosing that focus provides the opportunity to become distracted. Once you've chosen to focus on your breathing or anything else, you now can be distracted by physical pain or discomfort or any number of thoughts or feelings you may have. So that's step number two, is just to notice what distracts you. And when you notice these distractions, you can learn from them. And step three is, once you've noticed a distraction, return your attention to your focus. So in slacklining, I use the same three steps, but the focus is your physical posture. The distractions are getting out of that physical posture, maybe by looking down or leaning forward or falling off to one side. Or it could be distractions of, is someone looking at me? I low self-confidence, I'm not able to do this, I can't do this. Those are all distractions. So noticing those, noticing how they're affecting you, and then returning your attention to your physical posture. And that's what slacklining is. It's just, it's maintaining that physical posture in the moment.
And what kind of attitude is necessary in going through this?
I think the number one thing is commitment. Posture and commitment, those two things are slacklining. So you can't have an attitude. You need to have a growth mindset of you're not going to be able to do it the first time you try it. But every time you step up on the slack line and your leg is wobbling back and forth, you are building muscle memory. You're getting stronger. And if you're paying attention, you're learning things about how to keep your posture aligned and what kinds of things will throw your posture off, and then techniques for bringing it back. And while you're on the slack line, you don't want to be having all of these thoughts necessarily, but the more and more you do it, it kind of just happens subconsciously. It just kind of ingrains into your body, like, oh, I need to crouch down a little and move myself back in this direction.
Boy, it sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it, to something you do a lot, right, Margaret?
Yeah, I mean, you're including your brain and your body, and it's requiring your consistent focus, because if you lose your focus, you'll obviously lose your balance. Great core strengthener, really great at building new neural connections, mm-hmm. that neuroplasticity that we've been hearing so much about lately in the media and in science. And I've learned a new word, a scientific word, interoception, mm-hmm. and that's the ability to pay attention to what's going on the inside of our bodies, including the body in the meditation.
And it's so funny because Margaret's a yoga teacher and I've been a practitioner for quite a while, and I struggle with balance poses. In fact, when I would go to Margaret's classes, every time she would put us in a yoga posture, I would find an excuse. Well, this is a good time to go to the bathroom.
A balancing yoga posture.
Yeah, what was I saying?
You said a yoga posture.
Yeah, a balancing yoga posture, like tree is a great example. And the reason I didn't want to do it is I'm not very good at it. So all these stories would come up, and I would feel like I was going to be embarrassed. And I've just sort of gotten past that, you know. It's like, whatever. But it's interesting, when I'm doing posture now, I really need to stay focused. I need to be committed. So we have something called a drishti point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that in yours? You want to explain that, Margaret? What drishti point is?
It's a focal point for your eyes. And when you keep your eyes focused on that target area or zone, it's helpful.
So I want to kind of explain, like, what I'll do is I'll get that drishti point, and then I really bring my awareness to certain, to my body, like what I'm doing in terms of drawing the midline in or so on. And I find that if I start thinking about something else, I fall out of the posture. Similar?
It's the same thing. And for us, the drishti point is the end of the slack line where it meets its anchor point. And particularly on the slack line, if you look down, which is what people commonly want to do when they're learning, all you see is this line shaking back and forth.
Oh.
And that is not helpful for balance.
Sure.
So you need a clear focal point in order to stay up there.
I've heard that when you're driving to, and if you're sliding on ice, you don't look where the car is going, you look where you want to go.
Yeah, that's another thing I tell people, is that it's really the follow-through method. It's when you throw a baseball, you're following through. It's the same thing on a slack line. You want to look where you want to walk to. If you look down, you're going to fall down.
God, that's such a metaphor of life, isn't it?
Yes.
No, it really,
it's classic.
It's great.
Well, I loved how you explain the mindfulness practice, you know, an object of concentration, and then basically noticing what comes up, noticing what's arising. And what a great opportunity to see how our mind works. I know one of the things that we talk a lot in the work that we do is to really have an attitude of kindness about it, especially the stories that come up. Because, you know, again, going back to the balancing posture, my story was, I suck at this. You know, I had this view of myself as an athlete, and I can't do this. And just to watch all that chatter that's going on, I can really end up beating myself up if I'm not careful.
We really focus on trying to encourage people to keep a non-judgmental perspective. So no one can do it at first. It's a learned skill. So I always relate it to, like, learning to slackline is kind of like learning to walk again. And most, I'm pretty sure none of us remember the actual experience of learning to walk because we were too young, but you fall hundreds of times. But at that age, you're not like, oh, I can't do it. You keep getting up and you do it. And if you want to slackline as badly as you want to walk, you will do it. Anyone can do it. If you can walk a straight line, jog a straight line, you can learn how to slackline.
And the slackline, just to make sure our listeners are clear, is not suspended from a second story window.
It can be at the advanced level, but Slacklibrium is really focused on beginner level slacklining. So typically what makes a slackline harder is higher up in the air, longer in length. We start people off on very short lines. Our beginner lines are 10 to 12 feet, 20 feet sometimes. And that is a really appropriate way for someone to learn about knee height, sometimes even lower. So we do this with middle schoolers, and I can confidently say that middle school age children can learn how to slackline. Elementary school age children can learn how to slackline.
So you are doing a lot of work in the community, and I want to explore that. We're going to take a musical break in a few minutes, but I want to give Margaret an opportunity if you have more questions while you're still here that you'd like to explore with Jesse.
I'd just be really interested in hearing a personal story, maybe your own or someone else that you've worked with, and how that looks and felt for the person.
Yeah, I have, this relates to something we were talking about just a few minutes ago, but I have this one really recent story that I've been sharing that I think is really powerful. I do mainly middle school and older classes, but I have one elementary school program at Carolina Day School. And that's one of the more difficult programs for me to teach just because the kids are not quite as mature. They can't progress quite as quickly. They can't have as mature of a conversation about the practices we do. But they're great kids and they have maybe the most fun out of anyone. But this year I have a really small group. I only have three students. I have two first graders and one fifth grader. And the fifth grader was in our program last year. And part of our programming is we have these like skill progression guides. And it basically starts with like learning to stand on your right foot, learning to stand on your left foot, taking one step, taking six steps. And it lists all these skills from beginner to advanced. So it kind of gives them a goal as they're going through the program. And last year, my fifth grade student was trying really hard every single session and just not quite achieving these goals. And as we got towards the end of the program, she was getting really upset, like at times, like being on the verge of tears. And I felt really bad. And just one day I told her, I was like, it's not, you know, it's great to set that goal, but it's not always about achieving the goal. You don't have to be overly focused on achieving the goal. The process of learning and getting there is more important than being overly focused on the goal. And I have like, you know, a handful of lessons that I like really emphasize. And I'm like, I want you to understand this. That was just an offhanded comment one day. It was a random thing to try to make her feel better. In this program, all of the students get their own slackline at the end. So when she came back this past year, after having gotten her slackline, she had clearly been practicing and it just clicked for her. She's got it. She's slacklining. She's progressing through that sheet really quickly. So the first graders are not quite there. And this was like 3-4 weeks ago. One of the first graders was saying, I can't do it. I'm not getting it. And my fifth grade student told her, it's not always about getting to the goal, it's about the process of learning. Aww. And I was like, who told you that? And she was like, you told me that. And I was like, whoa, I didn't even remember that. But that I've been thinking about that in the process of anything I'm doing in my life right now for the past month or so of, I have goals, but it's not always about getting to the goal. It's about the process.
What's that old saying? It's not the destination, but the journey.
Yes. Yeah. What a great example, too. Aww. And I'm glad that you forgot about it because, you know, that's obviously a part of who you are. Just it's, offering those little
just
tidbits.
Natural.
Yeah, natural.
And you know what? That may be a story. Now, she's what? Let's see. Fifth grade. What? 10 years old? 11?
Yeah. 10, 11.
I mean, she might be telling her grandchildren about that.
That's you know? What it was so meaningful to me that she remembered that.
Right.
Because
yes.
you never know the impact that you're having. You're like,
exactly.
oh, these kids might not care about anything I'm saying. But at least to a couple of them, something sticks with
and
them.
And the ripple effect, because then she turned around. And I mean, I don't know if this is true, but it may be that that first grader hearing it from a fifth grader had greater impact than hearing it from an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very possible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, gosh, when I think about that and how much that may have changed her life and other people's lives, it's pretty cool.
I think about it in my own life. Like, I have a list of people who have inspired me and that I can very clearly connect to what I'm doing right now with my life. And I think about, like, oh, if it wasn't for that person, what they did, I might never be doing what I'm doing. Yeah. So in a way, anyone that I impact, I can draw the line back and be like, it was that person that did it to me. So you never know, like, who the person's going to be that will have this big change. It's, we're really all connected in that way.
And we never know what it is that we say, if it's done with pure intention and kindness, just how much it may impact another human being. Right?
These are the gifts of mindfulness.
This really is. This really is. Well, Jesse, I'm going to stop, take a musical break, and then I want to explore more of the work that you do. I know you've got events coming up, things that are going on. And I picked a tune this week called Tightrope. And I thought, well, the title kind of fits. And anytime I get a chance to play Stevie Ray Vaughan, I'm going to take advantage of that opportunity. So we'll take a few minutes and listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan.
This rat race feels like I'm losing time at a breakneck pace. I'm afraid of my own shadow in the face of grace. Heart full of darkness, spotlight on my face. There was love all around me, but I was looking for revenge. Never found me, would have been the end. Walking the tightrope, stepping on the fence. Walking the tightrope, was a shame in the sand. Walking the tightrope, between wrong and right. Walking the tightrope, both day and night. Looking back in front of me, the mirror's a grin. Through eyes of love I see, I'm really looking at a friend. We fall out of problems, the way life is. My heart goes out to others, we're there to make amends. We've been walking the tightrope, trying to make it right. Every day and every night, walking the tightrope.
have some Stevie Ray Vaughan with his offering of Tightrope. And that is from his album In Step. So this is Eddie Lesher, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPBM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or WPVMFM.org, Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m., and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. for the rebroadcast, past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. So you can easily locate this show and others by just going to WPVMFM.org and selecting the schedule and then picking this show up. It's listed Mondays at 7 p.m., and that'll just open up a window with all these shows that you can check out. And all our shows are made possible by Mindful Emergence LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for people living in recovery and for those wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. You can access more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. And by the way, if you're enjoying this program, one of the shows in particular on WPVM I encourage you to check out is A Better World, which is Thursdays at 5 p.m. when McNair Ezard interviews people and organizations working in areas such as hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, the environment, and spirituality. It's interviews with people who are really making a difference. So I want to return now to our guest. Jesse Goldman has been nice enough to come in the studio and talk about Slack Librium Slackline and mindfulness education. I'm curious about the name Slack Librium. I understand that you were involved in creating that name, and how did that come about?
Sorry.
Thought I had your mic on. There it is.
Are we good?
You're good.
Awesome. Well, I think the best way to explain the name is just to explain the founding of the organization, because really we came up with the concept before we came up with the name. So I learned to slackline my freshman year of college, and the end of my first year, it was May 2013, and we had this opportunity. We got invited to a very small festival campout where everyone who bought a ticket, tickets were like $30, and everyone who bought a ticket was encouraged to contribute to the event in some way, whether that was playing music or teaching a workshop or cooking food or doing anything you want. So Patrick, the co-founder of Slack Librium, I was like, hey, let's teach a slackline workshop. And we had just started learning, so we were by no means experts. But we did it, and we set up a couple slacklines at the event and left them up all weekend. And we're just really encouraged by the space it created and the opportunity to interact with people and for people to actually learn how to slackline at a basic level. So we got back from that event really inspired. It was my first summer after freshman year, and I started a Facebook chat with a small group of friends. And at first the idea was like, hey, we could do this and we could go to all these festivals and events for free and teach slacklining.
Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Here we
still haven't been to Bonnaroo. One day, maybe, if they're listening, send us an email. But you know, also, this is funny that our working title was Festy Slackers, which is an awful name, and I'm so glad that we didn't choose that. But one of my friends was like Equilibrium, like Slack Equilibrium, and I was like, let's just hyphenate it and go with Slacklibrium. So we made a Facebook page, and my little brother actually designed the first iteration of our logo.
That's a cool logo. He's got a shirt on. I wish we were on TV so our listeners could see it.
You can check out a picture of it.
It's great.
We'll post a picture.
Yeah.
We've got it touched up a little bit since then, but he, you know, I told him the concept I was looking for. It's just kind of like a little man or a, kind of more of an androgynous body on a slack line in between two trees. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we made that logo, made a Facebook page, started taking pictures and applying to events. And 2013, we did, I think, four small local festivals. And since then, we've done over 40 events.
Nice.
So it's kind of just grown organically.
Yeah. And also, I want to make sure you give out your website so that people can go and check that out.
Yeah, our website is slacklibrium.com, no dash. So it's just slacklibrium.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram if you do that.
Yeah, okay. So where are you currently teaching and offering classes?
So right now our main focus is educational programming. So we work in a variety of schools around Asheville. We do a volunteer-based after-school program at Asheville Middle School. We've been offering that for the past 2.5 years. We do a program with elementary school kids at Carolina Day School. We do an elective program at Francine Delaney New School for Children. And we're actually getting to the end of the programming session. So next week is going to be like our wrap-up classes with all of those kids. But for adults, I do weekly mindfulness circles at the Ohm Sanctuary here in Asheville. It's a beautiful space. It's on 55 acres of protected wilderness. And those have been on Wednesdays from 7 to 8:30. And this Wednesday is actually our last class. And then they will be moved from Fridays 5 to 6:30. During the winter months.
And what exactly is going to happen there if someone shows up? What can they expect?
So I view the mindfulness circle as not an hour of seated practice. It is a group experience. It's a series of short exercises interspersed with reflection and discussion. Depending on the group that shows up, we'll do either partner exercises or group discussion. And we really just tailor it to the people who show up. I like for it to be a circle because even though I'm the one facilitating, it's not lecture style. It's not like take notes as I give you all of this information and knowledge. It's more of like facilitating an experience that everyone who participates mm-hmm. in it can learn from. So I'm really focused on experiential education.
So you're saying that this coming Wednesday will be the last Wednesday and then it shifts to Friday?
Then it shifts to Friday, yes.
Okay. So obviously people can get information at your website about that.
Yes.
Anything that they need to know. And I just want to let our listeners know, for any show, any guests, any questions, you can contact me and then obviously contact our guests through me by emailing me at discover@amindfulemergence.com. So that's so interesting. So you're working with the as young as first graders,
yeah,
all the way up through adults.
Mm-hmm.
What do you notice that's similar? And what do you notice that's different?
So one of my favorite things about working with such a wide range of ages is that oftentimes I'll introduce the same exercises and practices, and it just differs on how deep into the conversation we're able to go. But I find that like elementary school age students are not very self-conscious. They're not worried about looking silly. They'll flop around on the floor and do silly stuff. Their attention spans tend to be shorter. That's natural. Once you get into middle school, that's like a really formative time period. So the difference between sixth and eighth grade can be huge. So the sixth graders still have that like young childlike energy. And as they move into seventh and eighth grade, they start to develop this self-awareness that sometimes they'll be worried about how they look.
Yeah.
They don't want to be seen failing.
Self-conscious.
And the adults are very much like that. Many of the adults, it's surprising, like they won't give it an honest shot because they don't want to be seen failing or falling. Especially in front of their kids.
Well, I have to admit, when I saw the slack line last summer at the Mindfulness Festival, especially you've already heard my story about how I don't have very good balance. I didn't go anywhere near it. But I have to say, if there was one right here, right now, I would get on it and give it a shot. Do you take your shoes off?
I think that's the best way. You can really feel the line better with bare feet. Mm-hmm. But you can use shoes, especially if they're flat-bottom soles. I don't recommend high heels. But you can. There are slack
no stilettos.
Yeah, it's not the best.
Not the best.
I don't recommend socks because they can be slippery.
Huh. And so pretty much anybody can expect to not do very well at first.
Yes. It's a learning process. But I really think that with some basic instructions of the posture that you're going for, if you give it 10 to 15 minutes of honest effort, you will feel yourself improving. You won't be walking across right away, but you'll feel yourself improving.
And what's the best attitude to have when you're approaching it for the first time?
you need to not be afraid to fall, and you need to be willing to stick with it. Like, it's one, a lot of people at like events that we're set up with will walk by and they just want to like step on it for a minute. They're not actually trying to learn the skill. Mm. But if you're able to commit 10 minutes, 15 minutes of your attention, you'll get it.
Okay. And how long have you been doing it now?
Since 2012. So, just under 5 years.
You're a black belt.
You know, I've still got a long way to go. You know, there's a lot of different styles of slacklining, and some of what I'm getting into on a personal level now is longlining, which is increasing the length of the line. So a beginner line might be 10, 12, 20 feet, but the current world record is 6,000 feet over a mile.
Oh my God.
Just imagining, once you have the experience of slacklining, you can really imagine the amount of patience and concentration and focus that it takes to walk a line that long. It took them just under 2 hours to walk.
Oh my God. So I also want to point out to our listeners, grab a copy of this week's Mountain Express, which of course will go off the stands Wednesday morning. So you've got tonight and tomorrow, or if you've got one lying on the coffee table and you haven't noticed, there's a great article on page 29 through page 31 called Walking the Line. Slacklibrium teaches mindfulness and balance to Asheville kids, done by Monroe Spivey.
Yes.
It looks like his name is that a
her
Monroe. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking, yeah, I don't know. That's one of those names, could go either way. So it's so interesting. And it talks about your experience as a freshman and so on. And it says here, for eons, acrobats and amateurs alike have been walking the line, so to speak. Tightroping is the grandfather of modern-day slacklining, going all the way back to ancient Greece. So this is really a long history. And there's a picture of you on a slackline, and it looks like there's a lot of space underneath you.
Yeah, that's...
Talk about that.
That picture is actually from Linville Gorge.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
It's right here in North Carolina. And that's really becoming a gathering spot for highliners in the Southeast. And highlining is one of the extreme methods of slacklining. And it's really... one way to think of it is when the line is higher up than it is long. So in this case, I think the exposure is like 400 feet or something like that. And it's a very scary thing for me. It's been a personal process of conquering fear. And I still would not say that I'm an expert in any sense. I've got a long way to go. But yeah, highlining is something that for anyone listening that might have bought a slackline at the store, like it's not something that you want to jump into. You can't use your typical slackline that you can get at REI or wherever. So it's something that you really want to, you need the main line, you need the backup line, you need the harness, the idea is redundancy.
And the harness is in case you fall, you don't really go all the way. Okay. Yeah. Whew. Yeah. I was looking at the picture and I was going, damn, that really, gosh, I hope he's hooked on that thing. And there's a quote in here. Everyone has a limited time in life. You're born, then you die. In between these two points, you have a number of moments. Your life is really the culmination of what you've decided to focus on in each of those moments. That's really well put.
Yeah, that to me is the main thing that I take away from mindfulness is what you choose to focus on in each moment. I think that our attention and our ability to direct our attention is the most important thing that we have. And you know, what hobbies we decide to focus on, what careers we decide to focus on, the relationships that we decide to give our attention to, that is what our life is.
Yeah. And it's amazing. We can be in the shower, but not in the shower.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be in the shower and really enjoying the sense. I mean, I love being in the shower. I mean, I really get why people do half-hour showers. I can't bring myself to do that. Maybe it's because I lived in the desert and I'm too worried about, you know, wasting water. Or maybe appropriately concerned about wasting water, but just feeling the soap and the water. But a lot of people, when they're in the shower, they're already at the dentist appointment that they're worrying about, or in a meeting, or driving somewhere, aren't they?
Yeah, we're all guilty about it. I mean, I tend to notice it like on my busy days when I stop to eat food and I'm like, I'm not even eating this food. I'm forcing it down.
I know. I'm joined this week on A Mindful Emergence by Jesse Goldman talking about Slack Librium, Slackline, and mindfulness education. So Slack Librium is primarily a service-based organization, but you've started offering Slackline equipment for sale. Talk about why you've chosen to go this route.
So when we first started, we didn't view ourselves as equipment manufacturers. We were really just focused on teaching people how to do it. But mainly, we started getting into offering these school programs, and we would finish a program, and the kids would be like, so how do we keep slacklining? And for some of them, they can go and buy a slackline. That's not an issue for them. They're not that expensive. But for some of the students, some of our students literally can't afford a $50 slackline. So we wanted to produce this equipment so that we could find a way to make it accessible to everyone that we teach. So part of what we're doing with the equipment is we also have a student sponsorship fund. So a portion of all proceeds from the equipment sales go directly into this fund, which allows us to offer reduced price or even free slackline equipment to students that complete our program, and it's need-based. So our hope is that we don't have to turn anyone away if they really want the slackline.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just sitting here looking at you. You've shared that you're on the verge of turning 23. And when you were in high school, you had this vision of really helping people, and you're doing that. Yeah, you're doing that. Where do you see Slack Librium in, you know, 10 years?
So one of my difficulties in talking about Slack Librium is that I'm like, do you know what slacklining is? Do you know what mindfulness is? Okay, I've got to explain this seemingly confusing thing to you. So my hope is that 10, 20 years from now, I won't have to go through those questions. People will know what slacklining is. People have a basic idea of what mindfulness is. And my vision is to make slacklining and mindfulness curriculum a standard part of gym classes everywhere. So every student that goes through middle school, high school, and participates in gym will have had the experience of being on a slackline, of being instructed through some basic mindfulness practices. Everyone that I meet, you know, people think that I'm young and they're like, oh, I wish that I had started practicing this when I was your age. So I'm like, well, what if we start them off when they're like 10?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I have a friend who teaches at the elementary school level in Asheville. She says there are mindfulness meditation classes going on in the Asheville School District.
That's a very new thing that I'm interested in learning more about. And I'll actually share that in 2014, while I was still a student at UNCA, we got this grant from the North Carolina Center for Health and Wellness to do a pilot program in Asheville Middle School, and it was called Mindful in the Middle. So basically, they let us take over the gym and health classes for a week to teach all the students slacklining and mindfulness. And as part of that, Mary Ellen Lau, one of our co-partners working on the grant, was a student at UNCA as well. She offered a faculty training session. And connected with some folks like Jesse Pitt, I'm the guidance counselor at Asheville Middle. And I don't want to take all of the credit for it or anything, but I do know that that had led in some ways to starting these mindfulness classes. And it's a fairly new thing that they're doing, but I read a Facebook post that Mary Ellen had put recently that now her kids in Asheville Middle School are getting 20-minute wow. mindfulness classes.
God, that's so amazing. And, you know, of course, mindfulness meditation and other body-mind practices like yoga and qigong and tai chi are used in therapeutic settings, working with people who struggle with mental health challenges, struggle with addiction, and certainly physical challenges. Is that something you've done at all? Could you see that happening? Is that an interest of yours personally? Do you know other people doing it?
Definitely. And I'm really interested in, as I move forward on this path of getting more research-based evidence about the benefits of slacklining. And we are very interested in seeking out opportunities to do senior classes and over 40 classes for people who are interested in maintaining a good sense of balance as they age. But with the younger kids, a big thing for us is ADD, ADHD, and kids that are just like, I cannot focus. And rather than giving them pills, you know, sometimes medication is necessary. It's on a case-by-case basis. But my opinion is that in general, we are an over-medicated society. Yeah. That's our first inclination is give them this pill, give them that pill.
Sure.
So
the magic bullet.
I never got on it. I'd thought about it, and my mom was pretty resistant to it. And I'm very grateful that she didn't stick me on Adderall or Ritalin. Mm-hmm.
And I could see, you know, trauma is so pervasive in our culture, and a lot of people, understandably, a lot of trauma survivors don't want to get back in their bodies because it's so difficult, so painful for them. Mm-hmm. And yet this is a practice that allows people, it requires people to get in their bodies, doesn't it? But it invites them in a very safe way.
Yes. And we're really focused on beginners and making it accessible to anyone. So, you know, one thing that I will say about working with people that have experienced trauma is that a lot of times the perception of mindfulness is like this very like light, loving, like thing that you do it and you feel very peaceful. And that is an element, but oftentimes mindfulness is just self-awareness.
Oh yeah.
So you're going to deal with whatever you're going through. So especially when you're beginning, oftentimes like you'll do a mindfulness practice and I've had students that will end up crying or like having a difficult experience. And that's something that you need to be prepared for.
It's learning to develop a relationship with the full range of experiences. I teach mindfulness, and I think there's two things that I constantly bring up over and over and over again. One is that the objective is not to relax. It may happen, but that's not the goal, is it, Jesse?
No. And I'm really focused on that. One of my biggest pet peeves, I've been to meditation classes where they'll be like, okay, close your eyes and meditate. And I'm like, for me at least, I'm like, what am I doing? What am I supposed? I don't know what I'm supposed to be accomplishing or what my goal is here. So just explaining to people and then letting them know that like, they're like, oh, I did it wrong. I had all these distractions. I was thinking the whole time. I'm like, no, that's great. Were you aware of that? That's what you're doing.
And that's why it's important to have an attitude of kindness and non-judgmental awareness around the process. And the other thing that I talk about is the goal of it is not to try to stop thinking. You know, a lot of times, well, I can't meditate because I can't stop my mind. Well, first of all, good luck with that. That's probably not going to happen anyway. Unless there are some advanced practices, mm-hmm. but no, the goal is really to kind of ignore our minds, isn't it? It's like, oh, there you go. I'm off on a story again.
Yeah.
Bring my awareness back to what am I feeling in my body? What am I noticing?
I've worked with a few people that have told me that they're never focused on anything. And I'm like, that's not true. You're just not even aware of what your mind is doing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you shared that you were kind of I think you used the term awkward kid or awkward socially mm-hmm. when you're in high school. has that changed?
Yeah. You know, I feel, I'm gaining self-confidence every day, but it's really a moment-by-moment thing. It's habits that you fall back into. And one thing that I notice, and I do some activities in some of my classes that get at this concept, but what is awkwardness? And when you experience this feeling of awkwardness or uncomfortability, if you really dive into that and are like, in this moment when I feel awkward, what am I actually focusing on?
Yeah.
I've found for me that typically whenever I feel awkward or uncomfortable, it's because I'm thinking about myself. I'm thinking like, oh, is this the right posture to be sitting in? Am I mm-hmm. saying the right thing? Do I look silly?
What are people thinking about me?
Exactly. So if you can just notice that and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm thinking about myself, and shift your focus to something else, to maybe thinking about the person you're talking to, that eliminates the awkwardness.
Such a great example. So great. Where do you draw inspiration from?
I really try to draw inspiration from everywhere. So I'm open to like, I can be inspired by, you know, a random person. It's not only famous people. But I had mentioned before Jon Stewart. I love Stephen Colbert, a lot of the late night talk show hosts and people that are using comedy to, as an opportunity to talk about important issues and make them accessible to people that might not want to turn on the news every day. Like pay attention to these important things. I draw inspiration from any person who is following their dreams and any person who has been doing that consistently for a number of years. And I love music. I find that in what I do, I relate the journey to to music of like musicians are people that are following their passion and they have figured out a way to do that. The successful ones, and it's not just about playing the music. It's about booking the gigs, making it financially sustainable, getting your name out there, forming relationships. And, so yeah, I listen to a lot of music and I draw inspiration from that.
Any particular favorite artists?
It changes. I like this band a lot. One of my inspirations in college was, this band called Wookiefoot, and they're not super popular. They're a really strange kind of jam band. They do a lot of different styles, but they're kind of hermits. They live in Minnesota, but my high school yearbook quote was a Wookiefoot lyric. And, it's the purpose of this life is to live a life with purpose.
Ever listen to jazz?
I do.
John Coltrane?
You know, I listen to jazz on occasion, but I'm not usually the one to bring it up. But I feel like a lot of the music that I listen to has jazz elements in it. I'm really into weird stuff, like anything that's different.
Yeah, yeah. I encourage you to check out some John Coltrane.
I'll have to get a playlist from you.
I'd be happy to offer that. So I know one of the things, obviously, in what you're sharing is you really feel passionate about being involved. I mean, what do you think are some ways for people? Not everybody is into Slack Librium. They're not going to do something. But what are some other ways that people can get involved in their communities and contribute to positive change?
Yeah. So I feel like when I was in high school, I was the type of kid that was like, I'm too cool to participate in this. I don't want to be on the student council or anything. One of the things I learned in college is that the people that show up to the meetings are the people that get to make the decisions, and those decisions affect everyone. So rather than complaining about what's happening, if you start to participate in it, then your ideas and values can be reflected. So whether that's, you know, starting a Facebook page about an issue that you care about, or, you know, having like a local meeting group, or, you know, tomorrow we have city council elections, and it's November tomorrow. That's your last chance to vote.
Yeah.
And in the primaries, it was 15% of registered voters, participated in that. So, you know, Mountain Express has a really great voter guide in their issue this week, and you could check that out. You can research it online, but go out there and take 10, 15, 20 minutes to cast your vote and have your voice be heard. And if you don't like the candidates, then run yourself. And it's anyone who ever complains about anything, just ask yourself, like, am I involving myself in this system at all? Or am I just complaining from the sidelines?
And there's a lot of ways to make a difference, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, really just in your day-to-day life, I think the easiest thing to do is just to be a genuinely good person in all of your interactions. If you can remind yourself of the type of person that you want to be, help people out and people will help you out. And I think what goes around comes around.
Yeah. If you would please give out your website information again, Jesse.
Yeah, it's slacklibrium.com, slacklibrium.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
And if anyone in the community is interested, you've got your mindfulness groups, your mindfulness circles.
At the Om Sanctuary.
Yeah.
This Wednesday is our last session from 7 to 8:30. And then for the winter months, it's going to move over to Fridays, 5 to 6:30. And I'm also available for private sessions through the Om Sanctuary, if anyone is interested in that.
Well, Jesse, I really want to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing in so many ways and your passion for life. And, you know, I think it's just great, especially, you know, I think you realize how blessed you are to know at the age that you're at already what your sense of purpose is.
Yes.
And to be able to feel that.
I feel very blessed. And I also recognize that I haven't done it by myself. I've been given many great opportunities in life that I'm very grateful for.
Good point. Well, thank you for joining me, Jesse Golden.
Thank you for having me, Eddie. I really appreciate it.
And thank you to our listeners for joining me again on A Mindful Emergence. And I want to point out that next week, my guest will be Monica LeBlanc, a therapist who's going to talk about love, family, and addiction. Yet another great A Mindful Emergence will be coming your way next week, and hope that you can tune in.